This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated. This is episode 65, Planes, Games, and Automobiles.
Welcome to another episode of GamesAtWork.biz. It is November 1st, 2013, and have we got a show for you. I am your host, Phaedra Boynodiris, and I am joined by no fewer than three other co-hosts. Yes, the secret has been revealed. We've got a new addition to our erstwhile team.
Woohoo!
Sandy Kearney, want to introduce yourself?
Well, thank you, Phaedra. It's Sandy Kearney, and I am joining the team now, looking forward to what's coming with the Games at Work, coming out of industry as well as the university environments.
Woohoo! The university environment. Brought to you by the university environment.
That's better than Monsters University, right?
Hey, by the way, we watched that last night while the trick-or-treaters were hiding in our neighborhood.
I'm Dave, and I'm an older student, okay?
So this is Michael. I'm Michael Rowe, and I'm in beautiful Durham. And we've got nice windy weather. It looks like it'll rain today, which I am looking forward to. Michael, over to you.
Yeah, thank you. And this is Michael Martin, the less caffeinated Michael for today's show. Although I think I've only had four equivalent shots of espresso over the course of today, but it's later here.
Yeah, you had it over the course of the day.
Yeah, it's just starting the day there in the U.S. So great that we're here all together, and we're going to have, like Phaedra said, a fantastic show for you. So why don't we start, Sandy, with a little bit of you and your background, how you've come to be around games, and we'll help introduce you for the audience here.
Thanks, Michael. Well, as you know, and for the audience, they should know, I have a background in the military and the government. So, you know, gaming really is nothing new. Games at Work, nothing new. I was lucky enough to do alternative futures planning at the Pentagon, and we used gaming to try to figure out where we thought the future might go. And I would say with some reasonable results as well. I went from that and spent some time. Of course, I have a long aviation background as a pilot, so, you know, simulating work is normal, and then actually conducting and executing it. And then went on into industry in information technology space, and then higher education. Through that, I have created games, have gamified conferences, have created really strategy games. I mean, I've done a lot from both the technology gaming side as well as just the human engagement gaming, which is something I think that's very critical to all of this and not something that we probably spend enough time on in general. So I hope I can bring my human engagement aspects to all that we're talking about for Games at Work, Michael.
Excellent. And you know, we want the humans to be engaged in our games.
As we welcome our new robotic overlords,
absolutely,
of course.
Absolutely. No, that's very, very, very cool, and we're so glad to have you, Sandy. And I know in our, I think we've actually had you as a guest on the show at least once early on when we first started kicking off.
I can't remember that far back, Michael, yeah. But I think so.
Yeah, and if not this one, it was certainly Dog Ear Nation, because I do remember, you know, pacing around in Spartanburg, South Carolina one time to do a show with you while I was out there in the fields.
That's right.
So,
which is different than the fjords.
That was a long time ago. No. I'm not going to be talking about dead budgies.
So no, I would all of you, one of the things that, yes, I do remember that. And by the way, I do teach. I teach emerging technology. I teach a lot of computer science classes, a lot of leadership and business courses as well. And I try to use this material. And I also try to, as we did in Dog Ear Nation, incorporate the new exchange of information back into my courses. So I'm hoping at some point we can do a Games at Work in one of the classes next semester.
That'll rock. We'd absolutely want to do that.
Yep. And I may be doing something similar with Central European University that's here in Budapest as well. So somehow or another, we're going to have to figure out technology that's beyond our current mortal means to help facilitate that. So, but yeah, exactly. So today's show is all about transportation. And
yes.
We agreed at the start of the show, we're going to start out on games on the terrestrial level And Michael, you had an observation about one of our, at least your and my favorite navigation systems, and something that you've seen happen recently when you hit a stop sign, or maybe
yeah. So we talk about Waze a lot, and really Waze is for those who don't know Waze is a GPS application that was put out years ago on iOS. I believe it's on Android also. It is gamifying traffic information and map information. And so what it would do early on, much less now, is if you were driving on an area that didn't exist on the map, you could get points by turning on the road construction crew, and it would munch up the road for stuff that existed already, but also it would lay down new road and you'd get more points. I don't think it does much munching anymore. However, you have kind of social aspects of seeing your friends and where they're driving, as well as traffic information while you're driving down the road. You can wave three fingers at the screen and then say, you know, there's a wreck up ahead, or there's a cop on the shoulder, or whatever. Really, really cool. They were purchased by Google, 6 months ago, I think it was, maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah, about there, yeah.
And the thing that I've noticed, as you kind of hinted at, recently in one of the latest updates, whenever I pull up to a full stop, could be at a stoplight or a stop sign or even in traffic, an ad shows up. And, you know, trying to figure out monetization of a free app that was crowdsourcing data through, you know, a gaming mechanics was interesting, and now we know. The ads show up, but as soon as you move the tire, the car moves any forward motion, the ad disappears. So not quite as annoying as I thought it would be as soon as it popped up, but still, you know, kind of interesting. And have you guys seen that at all, Phaedra or Sandy and Michael?
I hadn't seen that, but I do think that's interesting. So the hooks are in.
The hooks are in, which is okay. You know, I don't begrudge any business for making money off of their offerings.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I use Waze on nearly a daily basis here, and I have not seen that happen as yet in Budapest. And that's because potentially they're on a different set of servers here. So my leaderboard status had to be reset, or was reset, because when I logged in here, I didn't carry over my points and my road munching from the U.S. So it could be that this is starting in the U.S. and maybe we'll roll out worldwide later.
No, I haven't seen any munching going on. It used to be you would have munching going on, and you would have, you know, like special things on the road, like at Halloween, it might be candy, right, or ghosts that you would try to drive to, and that was really trying to game you to possibly go out of your way to validate road conditions, to validate existence of roads, etc. over time. But now I've not seen any of that in the last few months.
Well, I haven't seen any of the specials, right? You know, to the extra points you could get. You're right. I haven't seen that either. And from a road munching perspective, I've only seen a little bit of it, because my feeling is there are enough Waze users now out there in the world that most of the roads have been munched.
Yeah.
They know where they are. So I don't know if Waze was trying to encourage people through the special holiday themes to validate that other roads still existed, or if it was just more of an interest and keep people playing and keep people using the service. I don't know what was behind that.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I think, like I said, the gaming aspect was get you engaged, get you using them. And now, as you say, it is my number one GPS app that I use. I don't use Apple Maps or Google Maps or the TomTom app that I used to have, right? I go to Waze. It just works.
So I find this interesting, living in the northeastern part of the United States, because I would find that extremely annoying in the city, because I would be going from one stop to the next. And then I got to figure, well, how does that work in California, where they roll through stops and never actually stop the car a lot? There's an interesting regional aspect to this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
if not done well, you could just get to a point where that would be a complete turnoff. You know,
well, and it doesn't cover up the whole map.
TomTom.
Yeah, it doesn't cover the whole map. It's literally it kind of pushes the map down about, you know, a quarter of the screen and just does an overlay right up there, and then it rolls it back up. Hmm. If it covered the whole map, I would immediately switch apps. I mean, it would be that simple. Because sometimes... Yeah, because sometimes your brain forgets, am I taking a right or am I going straight?
Well, here's a question, a legal question, right?
Yes.
So regarding Waze and Google Maps and the fact that these companies are capitalizing on roads paid by taxpayer money, do you think like there's ever going to be like a lawsuit where the DOT, the U.S. government is going to turn around and say, hey, companies, you're actually commercializing on our infrastructure? Well,
no. And none of us, we should all say are lawyers, nor do we play one on TV. but I think from a legal perspective, the whole purpose of the whole, you know, transportation system is to encourage commerce. So, you know, making money on the fact that there's a road, if they went after them, they'd have to go after trucking companies.
Well, I think this brings up the whole layered mentality of, you know, if you look at aviation's got layers, you know, and you operate in layers. I think that's what you're going to start seeing in this digital space is you've now got another whole layer of commerce that lays on top of the infrastructure. And how is it those are connected? So I think it's a great question, Phaedra. But, you know, you're seeing it with the E-ZPass stuff too. I fully see at some point that E-ZPass, the transponder world going, hey, you know, we can make a little more money on these transactions if every time you go under one of them, I send you the little message and update about your account or whatever on your, right, you know, GPS.
Oh, well, it's interesting you mentioned that, Sandy. I was reading an article recently in the connected car space, and they were talking about the, just like you said, the E-ZPass, right? And that is actually, most people may or may not realize that it is constantly transmitting, and there are services that are capturing E-ZPass data around a city that are not, yes, they don't have anything to do with the E-ZPass function. They're actually tracking your movement and, right, you know, figuring it out from an ad perspective.
But what's that's, really, you know, fun when beaconing you anyway, that right? Sorry, Sam, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say what's really fun, Michael, is that one day I accidentally had two transponders in the car.
And did you get billed twice?
It totally blew up. I mean, they just couldn't figure it. They kept giving me red light. And it was because one was under the seat and one was hooked to the window. And I forgot I had the one under the seat. So two different cars, two transponders, one car.
So now you need a tinfoil hat for your transponder.
Well, it came with it. You know, yep. I used to have a transponder because I would travel to the Northeast so frequently that I did not want to sit and have to pay cash every time I went through the tolls, you know, over the bridges and on the highways there. So I had one, and it did come with a Mylar tinfoil hat bag that supposedly would protect the signals from leaking out, so to speak.
Help, help, my brain is leaking out through my hat.
Well, speaking of
connected cars and connected infrastructure, this week the American Road and Transportation Builders Association, otherwise known as ARTBA, held a summit called Transovation, where they were talking about the integration of games and gamification and point systems into the next generation infrastructure for cars on the road. A really incredible show. And I got to tell you, the first conversation was about the next generation and the fact that now fewer than ever teens are interested in getting driver's licenses. So there was really a level of panic, like how do we engage the next generation of drivers to care about driving? So
yeah.
It was very interesting.
Yeah, Phaedra, that's interesting that you bring up that specific point. And by the way, congratulations on being one of the speakers at that conference. So awesome stuff. And if there's any like links to your presentation or videos or whatever, we ought to put that in for our listeners. The idea of the changing driving habits and the fact that originally the car was seen as, you know, freedom. It was that liberating thing for teenagers. And all of us, I'm sure, couldn't wait till we got our driver's license and you know, got the old family beater that we could go out and drive around and go pick up our friends and go do stuff. But now, because of this connected world that we have and things like, you know, MMOs and other ways freedom is actually achieved through your cell phone, through the web, through online games, through all these virtual spaces. And absolutely right. The problem is, you know, driving's not a big deal.
And driving is the distraction now. It's the driving that's the distraction from the tweeting, from the Facebook, from the texting.
Yep.
That's right. So because we were raised in the one driver, one car mentality, and these kids are now seeing it as there's six seats. You only need one driver. So it's a 1-to-6 ratio for most of them. And the other five don't want to drive. They'd rather be on their device.
Yeah. And I've actually been talking with car companies on this, and they're all trying to figure out what's the thing that they can do to change the behavior and make cars cooler or get people hooked on driving, sound familiar, when they're younger so that they want to drive when they get old. And that's why you see, you know, all this infotainment stuff in cars. That's why you see things like, go cars or whatever it's called, where you have one car and you just, you know, walk up with your cell phone, you flash a QR code on it, and now you pick up the car and you drive it to the other part of the city, zip car, things like that, where you're trying to get people hooked on using the car, even though they don't have to buy it.
Well, there is a conversation at the show about community, right? Because now, next generation, we're more interconnected than ever before. This notion about when you're in a car, you feel isolated. How could that be changed with tech to feel more like a community? So a conversation was brought up about the MMOs in East Asia that are mobile and are RFID enabled, where it'll say, okay, within 6 meters of you, level 50 mage. So that same concept within a car, like just a few lanes over from you.
The Damon book from Daniel Suarez, right? The level 50 mage, you find them online, you can capture the data. Can you imagine taking, there's a couple of running games that's like Zombie Run.
Yeah.
Right? Now imagine that with your cars, you could do Mad Max, but there might be a safety issue there.
there might be. I don't know.
But the community renting kind of idea is there too. I mean, Phaedra, I was when I was at the conference in Mannheim just recently, this was an example I was given to, and I'm trying to find a company name. But you can register your own personal car and make it available for rent for somebody to use for an hour or two. And you could be discovered through a mobile app to go do that. And you hand over the keys and you get paid some money for some stranger to go do that. And
actually a couple of startups in San Francisco doing that in the States.
I'm trying to find those names.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the new growing space around shared products and services, right?
And I'd be glad to do that with my 1963 Ford Falcon, but not with my, 2013 Mercedes S-Class.
Oh, you have one of those? Awesome.
No. I really want my Falcon back. No.
But my head is absolutely exploding, guys. I mean, this what you're describing, the first reaction for me was no, because you're right. I grew up in the same, travel, transportation is freedom.
Yep.
And I still can't imagine that for many that being able to be with other people, especially in teenage years, is not seen as absolutely critical. But the point, I think, Phaedra, did you say that driving is now the distraction, right?
Distracted driving. Because they're already playing with other people, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. When we were kids, it was all about, Mom, can you drive me over to my friend's house so that we can play on the Atari? Now, everything is networked, so you don't have to do that. So it's very much a lack of incentive, if you will, to really move from point A to point B. And if you do want to do that, you go and mooch off of somebody else versus going and getting your own license.
See, and this is the generation grab. We would call that mooch off of somebody else.
Yes.
The young kids nowadays, it's like, hey, we're going to go do something physically together. So, Bob, bring your car over and the rest of us will pile in.
So maybe the idea is not just the rental of personal rental. Maybe it's an idea of a personal chauffeur, right? Almost a personal taxi.
A highly automated vehicle.
That's the the title for the show, automated vehicle.
or,
no, that's exactly right. I mean, there was this concern about next generation not really being interested in driving and just being wanting to be moved from point A to point B. But then there's also this concern about population growth, right? And how do you maximize your return? Do you go and you widen the number of lanes on the highway? Can you cram on more cars? When you cram on more cars, if you use automated vehicles, can you get these cars to drive closer together?
Closer and faster.
Exactly.
100 miles an hour with 6 inches between cars.
How do you minimize security concerns and crashing and this and that? But then all of this takes money. So there was a big conversation about how do you get the money to do the infrastructure through commercialization?
You do a Kickstarter.
Well, it was more like the point system, right? And kind of like Waze with your ads. You know, you're driving down the road and you've got augmented reality coming up on your windshield saying, hey, you're driving by a Starbucks. We know you love lattes and there's a special.
Yep.
But I don't know. This harkens back to how do you get to Mars? And I know we're on our way there as we go through our transportation arc. But how do you get to Mars? Well, the way you get to Mars is you create a reality TV show about it.
That's right. That's right.
you want to have this kind of stuff? create a reality TV show about automated transportation.
That's brilliant. Why didn't I say that at the summit?
Yeah.
But before you get to Mars, you got to get up in the air. And Michael, you found a great link yesterday about getting up in the air.
Thank you for that segue to get us up into the air. So the link that I found that was announced yesterday by the FAA was, you know, pause for it, wait for it. Can you use an electronic device in the air and maybe while you're taxiing and even taking off? FAA says yes.
About darn time.
Oh, so I have to laugh at this one because this is the case for a very long time. And the reality of it is they just didn't know how to manage the potential conflict of people who weren't polite with their devices. And what's very interesting now is that by introducing games, again, people have figured out how not to be loud with games, and they can be distracted and not, you know, need to be on the cell phone talking, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, bus transportation figured this out a decade ago.
Yeah, and I remember, and you know, years ago, reading an article in Air and Space Smithsonian talking about why originally, like 20 plus years ago or 20 years ago, it might have been a problem with you know, RF interfering with systems on the plane, but how modern fleets have solved this problem like 10, 15 years ago. And now at least the regulation is catching up. And you know, I can't tell you how many times I get on and I'm reading something on my Kindle and they're like, oh, you got to put it up. And then I got to go find, did I remember to bring a magazine or a book and pull it out, et cetera. So this is such good news. And you're right. Playing the games at takeoff will be loads of fun. And you know there's going to be some really good, you know, mobile developer out there who's using the GPS or the accelerometer to play a game during takeoff that takes into account the speed, direction, and velocity of the plane.
Or using that as maybe a bonus boost up that you get only when that happens.
Yeah, only play this game at takeoff and you'll get extra points.
Well, you know.
Because, well, you know, with the bring your own device concept that's taking over, and, you know, again, everybody's reasonably slow to catch on to it, even though it's happening with despite, you're going to find yourself doing middle of the road online gaming thing with the other people in the seats. I mean, that's already been wired into the old game systems in these airplanes where you're playing trivia against the guy in the back.
Yep.
But now I'm going to be on my own device playing against somebody who's, you know, four rows up to the left on their device.
And to paraphrase this one comedian, we hate the guy in the back. I think it was, I can't remember the comedian, but she was talking about, you know, flying and how the pilot would go, okay, now if everybody on the left side of the plane will look out, you'll see the Grand Canyon. We hate the people on the right-hand side.
Sorry about that.
I'm going to give you guys airline frequent flyer points for downloading my application. And guess what? I'm going to make the whole safety briefing a game for you that you're going to play before you ever even take off, because I'm going to give you 5 more frequent flyer bonus points to play it. And I'm going to have gone through the thing. And then all the flight attendant's going to do is just give you the FAA required blah, blah, blah. And if you don't pay attention, who cares?
Yeah, and on top of that, that's a really good point, Sandy, because on top of that, not only are you going to download that app to play something, right, but now the airline has hooked you. You've got an app on your personal device that is a game that's fun, but, assuming it is, but it's also going to now be able to give them more insight about your preferences, your behaviors over time when you're not on board the plane. And can you imagine taking that information and impacting your experience when you get on the plane? So, hello, Michael. Glad to see you on the plane. It's been a while since you've been here, but I did notice that you tend to go to a lot of coffee shops. So we're just going to bring you a cup of coffee when you sit down.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to challenge the three of you in a little game effect here. Who will be the first airline to embrace with it?
Singapore.
Okay, Michael Martinez.
Dubai. Dubai Air.
Dubai, who do you think, Phaedra? Who will be the first airline?
I didn't hear the question. To embrace what? You cut out.
To embrace this gaming and online device space and run with it.
Delta.
Delta?
I vote Southwest.
Yeah, see, I would have said Southwest to start with, but I actually have a friend of mine who's working on the in-flight entertainment system with Dubai Air.
Oh, insider knowledge. Come on.
And they're really pushing the level and capabilities that they're doing on that. So I would not be surprised, given what they're doing now, that once this announcement came out yesterday, they won't immediately jump on something like this.
So to level the playing field.
The international airlines have all been well connected much longer.
Yep.
I got to say it for the record. And I'm going to send a copy of this show on to Southwest when we're done, by the way. You know, you can never, ever preempt American pioneers who are so unpredictable. And Southwest follows that spirit.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, when you talked, Michael Martin, earlier about the boarding pass, and you guys talked about that game, and I think now, you know, you've got the whole – I think there'll be a luggage game that'll come on board. I mean, because just think about it. You know, you could race – if you have equal takeoff times, you can, you know, race one plane to the next to determine who actually gets boarded and gets their luggage on. And you can do all kinds of fun stuff with this.
Hey, Sandy, have you seen the Saturday Night Live skit about boarding of the plane that they did earlier this year? And they did the luggage thing, and the one guy, Keenan, I can't remember his last name, but he comes and he goes, oh, don't worry, it'll fit. And he's pulling this, you know, roller board, but it's like 6 foot by 8 feet by 3 feet deep. And I'm like, yeah, I've been behind that guy on the plane.
I got to say it for the record. Who was thinking about square suitcases in round overhead?
Observation,
all right.
And now that everybody's bringing them,
RFID tag in my suitcase. Okay, I'm gonna start that whole line of business now and just put the RFID tag right in the handle of the suitcase, and I know it's mine, and I can get. You know, and now I can even game. I can know right when they're telling me my luggage is on the way, and I know it's not. No, come on, look. See, it's just there. It's sitting over there.
Sitting there. I see the guy kicked it off the cart. It's on the runway. He's not even putting it in the plane.
Look, not only that, I've got a picture. Look.
You broke my guitar.
Because United Airlines hates guitars.
Before we leave this, I want to level the playing field for all these airlines that we just mentioned. And you know what, Sandy? I think our friends at Southwest may well be the guys with the peanuts and everything else to go there. But to level the playing field, here's an idea that maybe will help the airlines make and take advantage of this that much faster. With the advent of Wi-Fi on all these planes, why not make it so that you have to go through the briefing on your device? And if you do that, if you agree to do that, you get like 15, 20, 30 minutes of Wi-Fi. And then you get another amount of Wi-Fi if you download the app.
Excellent idea.
Those are excellent ideas. And that's really sad to say, because I remember working with Boeing on Connection when they actually owned the company and all, and they just couldn't monetize it and figure it out to get it out to these airlines. And I think at the end of the day, it ended up, like all things do, it goes out to the consumer end to drive it. But I think, yeah, Michael, and I really do. And I think, you know, where it's going next is only up to the creativity of the companies who can embrace it and the users that use it. So I've got my device. Like I said, I'm ready. I mean, I've been ready for, I won't tell you how many times I've actually used them on airplanes in the past, but I've been ready for a long time.
I find myself every once in a while looking at my phone as I'm exiting the plane going, oh, it's been on the whole time.
Whoops.
Well, darn, we didn't crash.
I've been happily, very happy for the first time to actually use the boarding pass on my device, you know, using the passbook in yep. the iOS environment. I did that with a Lufthansa flight recently, and I was really happy and pleased how well it worked.
It works.
Yeah, it was really,
so
was really,
you
really
think cool. it works this well in space?
Well, that's what I was wondering. So if we take it up a notch.
To how infinity well and work? Beyond.
So, Sandy, you'd said that earlier in the pre-show that you could take us to the stratosphere with our gaming conversation. So do it.
So, you know, I had to think about this and sort of add it for you guys because I can't get over the results of the movie Gravity. And, I mean, honestly, I hear it from everyone. I've not heard anyone say it was a bad show. Everybody says you need to see it. You need to see it in 3D, by the way, which is totally contrary to what I heard about so many 3D movies. So, and I think what that did also is just sort of bring this resurgence of things to our forefront around this gaming space. So there was a great show on this week about NASA and how it is they train for these spacewalks. And it's one of those few places where they really cannot fully simulate, even though they've tried underwater, and they use virtual environments to simulate for the astronauts a full spacewalk. You know, they have the tactical haptic feedback structures and all of that. But again, it goes back to the seriousness of what can be done with real games at work and in these kinds of environments. And that's certainly one that's out there. It's been used for a long time, but it's starting to change flavors and change perspectives. And again, I think because the next generation is already doing all of this, you know, they're all digital natives, as Tapscott says, right? And so they don't mm-hmm. even think anything of it. We think it's so profound. And yet you see them at NASA going, well, this is how we train, and this has become very ordinary. And there's much more to come there. And I think gravity's helped us all
remind us. How do the haptics work in that, Sandy? I mean, you don't have to be like in a bed of goo or something, do you?
No, they actually have the gloves and they have the headsets. And by the way, I got my Ocular VR headset.
Woo!
Thank you, Michael Rowe. devices are going to change the way things are done in this perspective. And it's going to take us full circle back around to, you know, how we're connected, not needing to physically connect through driving to someone's house or whatever. I can see you. I can, you know, and by the way, I mean, it's not just space. I would tell all of you, they've now got the haptic devices so that a heart surgeon who is doing surgery can actually feel what it feels like to touch a human heart. And, you know, so you've now got the ability to try to feel, because remember, in space, you are not using your hands. You've got gloves and all that equipment, right? So it's very normal for them. The haptic devices do not feel that different from, you know, what you have. It's not like we're touching with our hands. So they've got all that equipment on them. And that's what is, you know, the equipment with the visual and audio pieces to try. And then scoring, you know, that when they're able to actually make the correct touch and connect back up to the space lab, if you will, which is where they primarily are working now since the shuttles are all retired.
Yeah. I would want my heart surgeon to score 1,000,000 bonus points.
Well, I would want my astronaut to score 1,000,000 bonus points. It's even the playing field, because at the end of the day, all of these things, when you get down to life and death kinds of things, change the game. Yep. And, you know, this is what's just unequivocally amazing about that. And we're reminded when we get a great movie like Gravity that's out, and, you know, originally, and by the way, that took almost 2 years to film. I happen to have a colleague who is one of the agents for one, the production designer there, and got to hear a lot about what's so I think space is going to really be the next frontier. And of course, my question for that's always going to be, well, who's next, not what's next.
Right.
Because
right.
I suspect, although the U.S. tends to lead the way, I think China's really on top of this one. And you know, they've got a different perspective than we do in how they achieve it. So with Asia embracing gaming so much quicker, I'll be really intrigued to see how it goes. And like you said earlier, I think SpaceX and the whole XPRIZE thing did a great job in moving this along very quickly. So I would say let's start some more games and some more competitions to try to advance it faster.
Yeah, I was really lucky about 6 or 7, maybe even longer, 8 or 9 years ago to meet one of the judges of the SpaceX Prize and chat with him. I'm stoked. As Sandy, as you know, I'm a, and Michael, I know you know this, and Phaedra, I know you know this, I'm a space geek.
Just a wee bit.
And I am so stoked that I recently got an official NASA invite for the Maven mission launch, which is this month. And I'm clearing my calendar to go down. Unfortunately, I can only block 2 of the days, and it's the first 2 days of the launch window. So I may be there. It may or may not launch due to weather, but right now all systems are go to launch on November 18th, and I am stoked.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
So, and I'm going to game my way on them on the flight.
I know you're going to have your big camera to take lots of pictures of this.
Oh yes. Oh yes. With the telephoto lens, and it'll probably still be far enough away because I think it's an Atlas V that they launch off of.
Yeah, so the viewing platform will be, what, 2 miles?
Something like that. The other day they had on NASA TV, they had a pre-launch conference with a lot of the mission managers and the science mission managers, which was really, really cool. And even, you know, you could ask NASA via Twitter, hashtag Ask NASA, and they would try to answer some of the questions on air live. Didn't get my question asked, but... you know, it was cool. It was really cool. So I'm stoked. I'm very stoked.
Congratulations. You will go there and be our representative for all of us who want to see it too. That's awesome.
So I know we're just about out of time. Isn't there something else going on related to space maybe today?
Games in space.
A game being played in space
with that maybe Harrison Ford.
Space invaders.
For the entire human race.
It's the 40th anniversary of Space Invaders.
Yeah, that's it. No. So I know we're all big fans of Ender's Game, from a book perspective, and the movie starts today in the U.S. And I'm definitely stoked to try to get that on my schedule to go see.
And you know, Michael, that is one of my all-time favorite books.
Oh yeah.
you know, I use that regularly in my work to try to get people to think beyond the limits of their minds today. And, you know, and again, I think the other piece that's so important is we do not understand fully what the next generation is going to do or how they really are wired. We've created a whole different perspective. So Ender's Game is going to be, I can't wait to hear the results of that one.
Yeah.
It's been a great movie month in my world.
It has. And I was seeing our good buddy Andy Piper actually going to see Thor last night, and it doesn't show up here till next Friday.
Oh, geez. So he was doing that before trying to put in the Philips Hue lights that didn't work. That explains why he didn't get home until, or didn't finish that until like 2 or 3 a.m. this time. I'm trying to see what if I can see Ender's Game here in Hungary, or if it's going to be a lot later or not, and you know, I can't tell.
In this connected world we've been talking about with planes, games, and automobiles.
And space.
you know, it's still amazing that we have these restrictions in place on distribution of digital media so that, you know, it shows up in UK before it shows up in the US, and maybe a month or two later it shows up in Hungary. You know,
well,
you would think it's all one connected globe.
You would think so, but maybe they also want to find out who's recording what, you know, through those, what do they say? There's some sort of like infrared
watermarks.
You know, watermarks so they can tell. It's like, oh, you recorded this at the Carmike Cinema.
Well, actually, what they do there is they have infrared lights at the front of the theater that you don't see, but if you try to film it, it blacks out the screen.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's cool.
It's interesting how they do use the tech to
Oh, stop man.
Piracy. Yeah, but every tech has a defensive tech that comes around it, too. So yeah.
The infrared filter that you put on your iPhone. Which then they go to ultraviolet.
My kids and I always love to talk about radar detectors.
Can you detect if a radar detector is detected by the radar detector?
Well, that's all I know. Refreshing. It's refreshing, refreshing, refreshing to have all of this stuff going on in such a positive way.
Yeah, there was a great picture that went around the net yesterday, maybe before, that showed a Model T and the Opportunity rover, and it says one lifetime. We've gone from there to here in one lifetime.
Yeah, it is amazing.
So just think about it the next 60 years.
Ah. And you can have any opportunity you want in any color you want as long as it's silver.
Or space gray, like my new iPad Air. Well, this is Sandy.
We're moving quickly to being our own devices, as I would say. That'll be for another show at another time.
Absolutely. And Sandy, we're so excited to have you on the show as a co-host now. We've been working through this for some time. So, woo-hoo, yay!
So excited. This is so fun. It really is.
And I think we're at time.
Yeah, we are at time.
Anything exciting going on next week for each of you?
Nah. We're going to get back together and we're going to do this again. That's yes. What I'm looking forward to.
Absolutely.
Well, I do have exciting stuff going on next week. As you guys know, we're going to be launching this cave at Villanova, so we're getting ready to do that, and you'll hear more about that in the upcoming shows.
Excellent.
Right. Sounds awesome.
Well, thanks everybody.
Phaedra, am I going to Canon next week or not?
I don't know. Let's discuss.
You can pick up a new laptop there.
yeah, for euros as opposed to dollars. Yeah, that's a good trade.
Actually, in Canada, it'd be Canadian dollars, eh?
Yeah, well, no, this is the French version.
Oh.
Can't.
I wish I'd have known. I tried to hook you up with Vilmos Zsigmond while he was over there.
I know I missed that from the Skype chat. I apologize. We'll keep our eyes and ears open. I'm here for a while. I'm sure it could happen again.
Yeah, well, he's going to be back over in the near term. So Vilmos Zsigmond, who's one of the gentlemen I'm currently working with, and was the cinematographer on Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Deer Hunter, a whole list. You can Google him. Wonderful man. And at some point, since he's from Budapest, I'm going to get him to meet Michael Martin over there and let Michael meet a whole new network of people.
So we just want to say thanks, everybody. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Google+, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to wrap this show up. So right, thanks, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.